hands it off. Left circle, McNabb. Dorothy of one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Eichel takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin! Score! Noah Hanifin powers the goal!
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Come on, Chappie.
Sticks down, drop the puck for hour number two here on the VGK Insider Show.
A lot to get to. We'll check on the text line. We started the show talking about how you deal with people you don't like. And then we got into the whole interaction between Tkachuk and Kreider. What would you like to throw into the stands in any type of athletic event? And then goaltending, the high price that the Florida Panthers are paying to Sergei Bobrovsky right now, and will it have an influence given how the last 2 years have gone? Florida getting to the Stanley Cup final and knocking on the door this year. Will it influence people? We saw the way the Golden Knights handle things. The other teams have gone down a similar path. We'll run through the top five salaries from goaltenders in the National Hockey League and give a worth it or not answer from Ryan Wallace. We also want to just touch on, there was a quote yesterday over at the World Series of Poker. Jonathan Marchessault was on hand and talked about how hasn't talked to the Golden Knights just yet. He's slated to be an unrestricted free agent on July 1st, and he said that they haven't had a call yet or anything. They said they were interested. This is Jonathan Marchessault talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. They were interested in signing me. They have until June 30th or so. There was some, and I heard from different people that were reaching out wondering how is this happening, what are my thoughts on it, what do I think is going to happen. And what I can tell you is it doesn't feel like it, because we've been talking about it for basically a year, coming off the Stanley Cup championship, and that that Jonathan was going to be on an expiring contract. So it feels like you're running out of time, and you are, but you're not. Like, in the grand scheme of this, the way these negotiations are done and are handled, there is a wealth of opportunity to be able to come to an agreement in the next little while before July 1st. And both sides roughly are aware, because the agent's doing the comparables and the team is doing comparables, and you're picking where you want to be on that, and the team is looking at their salary cap structure. The player is looking at the salary cap structure and knowing what's available. So both sides are fully aware of what the landscape is. And I don't think that it would be a huge just accomplishment to see a deal done. I also see a situation where it could be difficult to get a deal. If a deal is going to happen, sides are going to have to move, because Marchessault's coming off a career year. Now, it's an anomaly. Like, he never scored more than 30 before. He topped 40. Career year, Conn Smythe, there's a lot to love about Jonathan Marchessault and what he means as a player, statistically, what he means as a veteran player to that room. There's also the idea that you have to take into account of where the team is financially with the salary cap, and there's not as much money that maybe the Carolina Hurricanes have, right? Like, it's ridiculous how much money that they have. So I wouldn't read a lot into those comments yesterday. I anticipate there will be conversations. If I'm Jonathan Marchessault and I'm this close to free agency and I'm in my 30s and I'm coming off a career year and I've won the Stanley Cup, why wouldn't I take a peek? Like, I know he says that he hasn't talked to the team, but like that works both ways, right? And I don't know whether Marceau's camp has reached out and they haven't got a call back. I'm unable to give you that scenario. Mm-hmm. But if I'm the player, I'm not knocking down the team's door right now because of where my value is going into unrestricted free agency. Not to say that there won't be a conversation, but there's opportunity there to take a peek for Jonathan Marchessault at the open market. And the team, I assume, would be well along looking through that lens too and knowing what is available for Jonathan Marchessault this close to free agency. If you're going to do a deep, and this is purely me looking at it. Mm-hmm. If you're going to negotiate right now, are you negotiating against yourself? Because the player has the opportunity to still go to free agency, and they're looking at it. If you're going to have all these talks now, are you just, is the team negotiating against itself in that regard? So I think when we get closer, it might be 2 weeks out. It might be 2 hours out from free agency. I'm fairly confident that the two sides will have a conversation. Whether they come to an agreement, can't say that. But I do anticipate a correspondence of some kind.
So I think you hit on a couple of things that are worth mentioning and I think are at play here. It does feel like this is the 11th hour, mainly because we've been talking about a potential Jonathan Marchessault contract extension for the better part of a year now. Given the fact that he scored 42 goals, given the fact that he won a Stanley Cup, given the fact that he was a Conn Smythe Trophy winner, it just felt like a natural progression that he would be locked up. But here we are, a month out from free agency, which means the Golden Knights and Jonathan Marchessault's camp still have a month to get together, have a conversation, and see if they can make something work. I'm not concerned about the timeline right now because you still got 4 weeks. You still got time to kind of meet in the middle somewhere if that's what both sides choose to do. But as we've talked about more often than not when it comes to the Golden Knights front office, they will make tough decisions for the betterment of the hockey team. And to your point, Darren, if you're Jonathan Marchessault and you're coming off of a 42-goal year, why not just take a peek at what's out there on the open market if you get closer and closer and closer to it, like a week out or a couple of days out?
So we'll keep an eye on that and see where things progress. But there is even, and it feels like time has sped up too because the Golden Knights aren't playing, right? Mm-hmm. That's another reason why it feels like things are just going at a little bit faster pace than they normally would. Let's get into the goaltending conversation. I asked you with Sergei Bobrovsky being the highest paid goaltender in the National Hockey League. Yeah, technically, he's number two. Carey Price is listed as if you want to go technically, as the highest paid goaltender. He is at 10.5, but Carey Price isn't playing anymore. So Bobrovsky has this cap hit of $10 million right now. Mm-hmm. That is the situation for Bobrovsky, is number one at $10 million. How much has it influenced you watching Bob go to the Stanley Cup final last year and knocking on the door this year to putting big dollars into one guy as a goaltender? Andrei Vasilevsky is number two at 9.5. Connor Hellebuyck is number three at 8.5. Then you got Ilya Sorokin and John Gibson at 8.2 and 6.4. There's a drop-off there
between
Bobrovsky, Vasilevsky, Hellebuyck, and Sorokin, and then you get down. Now, Jacob Markstrom is a top-10 guy. Jordan Binnington is a top-10. There's other players. Igor Shesterkin, if you're wondering, is at 5.6, and his contract, I believe, has one more year. Let me just check on that, whether he's He's got one more year left, 24-25 at 5.6. Mm-hmm. So he'll get a raise. But those are your top five guys. I want you to tell me, worth it or not? Sergei Bobrovsky at $10 million per.
Yeah, it's worth it right now. I mean, there was a period of time where it didn't look like it was going to be worth it for Bobrovsky in Florida specifically. But right now, the way that he's played, not just this postseason, but last postseason, it's 100% worth it.
Andrei Vasilevsky at 9.5.
It's been worth it from the minute he signed it, and it'll be worth it until that deal is done. Yes.
Connor Hellebuyck at 8.5, 31 years old, and just finished the first year of a 7-year deal.
Not worth it.
Okay. Ilya Sorokin at
not
8.25.
Worth it. Yeah, not worth it.
Kind of part of a tandem there. And John Gibson at $6.4 million. This is part of a longer term deal that John Gibson's had. But at $6.4 million and has two more years left on this, is John Gibson worth 6.4?
Not worth it.
So you had a couple no's.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A couple of yeses in there. Now, Carey Price is a great example of the risk that you put in. He's 36-year-old. Yeah. He hasn't played in a couple of years. So early 30s, he was done and unable to play. Hopefully, they had insurance on that contract. I don't know how much. They have LTIR. And Montreal can make the money back, but there's a risk there. I don't know whether that exercise solved anything, because you got a couple no's and three yeses in there, but it does illustrate the risk. And I don't know how much higher I would go than 5.5 for a number one goaltender. If I'm gonna spell it out, so 5.5, you're looking at the very least 6.5 on total salary if you go with the league minimum for your backup. Mm-hmm. But you can get a goalie tandem for Bobrovsky's money alone, or Vasilevsky, or Hellebuyck,
sure, yeah,
or Sorokin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sorokin's the one on there that really doesn't do it for me, because, as you mentioned, he's part of a tandem, right? So, like,
I love his game, but
he is, but for $8.25 million, like, you can't be a tandem goaltender. You just can't. And you have to be the guy that's getting the starts in the postseason, and you have to deliver on that talent, that raw ability in the postseason. That's a big reason why Connor Hellebuyck, to me, it's not worth it. Like, I understand why it's worth it for the Winnipeg Jets. I know why you signed that contract last year. I get it. I do. But the question that I have on Connor Hellebuyck is, can he get you where you need to go? Can he get you to the promised land? Can he win you a Stanley Cup? And you have not seen him advance past the first round for the last couple of years, and it just kind of falls apart for him in the postseason. So, you know, the reason why I go worth it for Bobrovsky and Vasilevsky is because they've done it, right? Like, Igor Shesterkin, I would have no problem paying Igor Shesterkin what he wants.
$10 million.
I would, Igor Shesterkin to me, $10 million goaltender, okay. Like, 100%. I'll go down that road, because
how many guys are there that would fall under that umbrella?
I think we're talking about all of them, right? Like, Bobrovsky, Vasilevsky, Shesterkin. I don't know that there's another guy that I'm looking at on this list right here. Maybe so Thatcher Demko gets there. Jake Ottinger, maybe he gets there. But those are kind of the guys right now.
Look at it from a different angle. There's 19 goaltenders in the NHL, according to Cap Friendly, that make $5 million in an AAV. Aiden Hill's right outside that window at 4.9. But 19 guys. Is that more or less than you thought for a number of goaltenders making $5 million?
I would say it's more.
19 is more than I thought.
Yeah, more. More than I thought, for sure.
Four of them are not in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. That's wild.
Carey Price.
Yeah.
Robin Lehner.
Yep.
Jack Campbell. Like, some of them are injury. Some of them are play. Mm-hmm. Cal Peterson.
Yep.
Not in the top 10 to run down some of those guys that are not in the National Hockey League. So where, if you put a cap on the position, what would you allocate to goaltending?
If we're not talking about the elite of the elite, right? If we're not talking about Bobrovsky, Vasilevsky,
your three,
Shesterkin, then I think for a number one, it's five or less. I think I'm right in line with that. Like, looking at some
for
of the names
tandem,
that
like
make
for a total tandem.
I don't think I'd go more than $6 million.
I think eight would work.
Yeah, I don't.
That gives you six and two, or any combination
six,
of it.
Yeah, I still think, again, like, when you look at the list of goaltenders making $5 million or more, like, it's not exactly an endorsement for paying a number one or 1A guy five or more, $6 million. It's just not.
Others that make $5 million.
Yeah.
Markstrom, and he's going to be traded this year. Grubauer in Seattle did not have a great year. Hasn't been outstanding since he signed that deal. Remember, Colorado had the option there. I walked away. Mm-hmm. Tristan Jarry, inconsistent. Yep. Darcy Kemper, cashed in. Linus Ullmark, Vezina Trophy winner. He's earned that money. UC Saros earned that money. Mm-hmm. Thatcher Demko earned that money. You're probably 60% good with the $5 million group. Jordan Binnington, back here.
Yeah. So then, in that situation, like, I wouldn't want to pay, if I'm in a tandem or a closer to modern number of starts scenario here, I don't think I'm going to go above $5.5 million for a starting goaltender.
And then pay $1.5 million for your backup.
Yeah, more or less. So I guess collectively, I'm willing to go $7 million thereabouts.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless you get somebody on a really good contract or entry-level contract, it's hard to go $1 million or less on the backup. Now, there's some great examples of it. Vegas is a great example with Logan Thompson, the value of Logan Thompson's contract, or Lauren Brossoit. I think Brossoit was 2 in Winnipeg, and I've heard that they're going to cut back on the backup salary there because they want to lessen the impact on the position on the total team because of the money that Connor Hellebuck is making at 8.5. But if I think you need a good second option, and it's hard to do that if you're front loading and not spending some money in that. Like, Jonathan Quick was a great signing by the New York Rangers because it gave them some experience as a backup, a guy near the end of his career. We saw his impact here, but I don't know, unless it's that situation, like, Quick was 1.25.
Yeah.
You've got other guys where they're good, but you don't want to risk that. If you don't have a secondary option, it can go sideways in a big, big hurry.
So shouldn't your breakdown then be a $4 million guy and a $3 million guy?
Should be.
Okay. Except for the exceptions, right? Like, it's not a mistake to pay Andre Vasilevsky $10 million.
No. If you've got Andre Vasilevsky,
right,
I think every manager would pay that.
Right.
Don't want to speak for every manager, but but I'll put
get
it out there.
Get you in trouble. Yeah.
I'll put it out there. I think it's like McDavid, like you get the unicorns.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think in terms of goaltending moving forward, you're going to have those guys that are going to break the market because they are, as you just said, unicorns. But I think over time, especially if it's going to be more of a 1A, 1B type of scenario, then like the best breakdown that you can get is going to be one guy making slightly more than the other guy, and you're amounting to $7 million-ish in goaltending between the two, and you ride with whoever's playing better at the right time of the year.
What do you think Thatcher Demko gets in 2 years?
I mean, he'll be 30 at that point. There's injury issues, just injury concerns.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I don't have any like allegiances to Thatcher Demko, but like with everything that I just mentioned, the age, the injuries, all that, like I don't know that I'd be willing to go over $7 million.
Yeah. That's fair.
I'd be reluctant to do it.
Jake Ottinger is a $4 million goaltender right now. Good contract.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
He's got he's got one more year.
I would not be as reluctant to go over $7 million for Ottinger as I am right now for Thatcher Demko. And age is likely is the only reason why I say that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can put the number down for Igor Shesterkin. I'll sign that contract tomorrow. But Demko, great. I don't know that I'd want to go over seven. And Ottinger, I'm less nervous about it longer term, but I don't put Ottinger in the same category as Igor and Bob and Vasilevsky.
Florida Panthers also paying Spencer Knight $4.5 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of money. He's been up and down. Wants to get back to the career path that he was on a couple of years ago. But that's goaltending is really difficult. Stuart Skinner, if mm-hmm. you're wondering, makes $2.6 million. Same age bracket as Logan Thompson, but was able to sign that deal at a different stage of his career, like just slightly ahead of the curve. So that's why he's a little more high paid than Logan Thompson, but similar ages.
Yeah, and that's about what I would pay for Stuart Skinner, right? Like, I don't know that I'm going to go just in terms of the next contract, whenever he's up, like, I don't think I'm going more than what he's making right now. I think that's a reasonable price for what he gives you.
Like, you're looking at the Edmonton Oilers and mm-hmm. like just money spent. Really interesting example on how much they've put into goaltending. Now, they did put money into it. It's just not in the NHL, in Jack Campbell.
Yes, yes.
At more than four. But the actual dollars that they're spending right now on their NHL goaltenders, best deal of the Final Four.
Sure.
With Calvin Pickard and Stuart Skinner.
Right. Right.
It's not even close.
It isn't, but I also think that that's going to be a reason. And listen, Stuart Skinner's been fine in this series against Dallas, but I still think that when it's all said and done, the reason the Edmonton Oilers, in my opinion, are not going to be playing beyond next week is because of their goaltending. But, I mean, we can really dig into all the other issues with Edmonton, too.
You're still not sold on Stuart Skinner, eh?
I think he's been fine, but I just don't think he's going to be the guy to give you that save. When you need it, when you absolutely need a save, I don't think he's going to be able to get it done for you.
He will be talk radio's hot button, sports talk radio's hot button in Edmonton for as long as he plays there. It's just the way it's going to go for him.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, again, like, I think Stuart Skinner's been fine against Dallas. But I don't have the same confidence in Stuart Skinner that I would have in, like, if I'm Florida. You need a save. I feel confident Bobrovsky can get you one. You need a save. I feel confident that Jake Oettinger can shut the door when he absolutely needs to. I just don't have that same confidence in Stuart Skinner. I just don't.
What do you think happens tonight?
I think that the Dallas Stars beat the Edmonton Oilers, and I don't get the sense that we're going to have these wild fluctuations in domination from period to period. I think Dallas is going to be more engaged from the opening faceoff. I think the way that Edmonton lost Game 3 is deflating, and I just think the Stars are going to smell blood and they're going to ratchet it up tonight. That's what I believe.
Dallas has struggled with their starts.
Yeah.
Now they're unbelievable on the road in these playoffs. Lost just once.
6-1.
Yeah.
6-1.
So there's a recipe for success there, but they haven't been great in the first period for a few games now.
Mm-hmm.
If they can fix that,
yeah,
they should be good. Now, one of their low points in the playoffs was having a great lead, and that was at home, and dropping a game against Colorado. But as everybody keeps looking for the Edmonton answer, what will be the response by the Oilers? I think there's an element to wondering how Dallas will react after dodging a really disastrous moment the other night. Do they crank it up?
See, I lean more in that direction that they will, because I think they're too well coached, and I think that, you know, again, it's a veteran group that has been close before but has not gotten it done. They haven't won a Stanley Cup as this collection of players, and you can't allow yourself to have to constantly dig out of holes in these games, especially when you can put together hockey that dominates the opposition. So I think the Dallas Stars recognize they dodged one in Game 3, and I think that they're ready to go for 60 minutes tonight. I really do.
I'm going to enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah, me too.
No skin in the game.
It's great.
And if it's bizarre and strange and back and forth like the other night, I'll enjoy it even more, knowing how stressed out everybody else is that's connected to that series. And I can just sit back and have a cold one and go, wow, did you see that? That was cool. That was wild. I've never seen that before, the back and forth of that.
Yeah.
If there's three goals in the first 5 minutes, all by one team, and it's a blowout, I'll be like, huh. Hope it gets a little closer, because I'd like to watch the whole game, but that's okay.
Sure.
I mean, it's getting in the game. Let's take a break. When we come back, one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
Let's get into it. Lineup change for the Edmonton Oilers, and I like this one. Corey Perry is going to return to the lineup tonight for game number four. He's been a healthy scratch for a while now. I think going back five games. So the 39-year-old is back in for the Edmonton Oilers. Are you looking for bite out of him, or are you looking for some kind of contribution?
Well, the fact that he's starting on a line with Leon Draisaitl would inform my decision that I'm looking for contribution. Like, the bite would be great, but the fact of the matter is, if you're going to play alongside Leon Draisaitl, you got to produce. And Corey Perry's been able to do that at different stages of his career. Coming back into the lineup, I'm looking for goals. I'm looking for points from Corey Perry.
This is the words of Chris Knobloch. There are a lot of attributes: goal scoring, leadership, puck play, smarts. You're saying goal scoring is front of the...
I'm saying give me any type of production you can, whether it's assists, whether it's goals. If Corey Perry can jump in and fill in and give you something on the score sheet, I'll take that all day long.
I think the leadership part is underappreciated here.
Sure.
As a guy that's been through everything that hockey can throw at you, I think having a guy that can be calm, he can get in your grill, he can upset you, he can make you want to grab his mouth guard and throw it in the stands. But but having that guy that's been through it all on the bench, I think is great. And this decision, I think, tells you where the Oilers are in this series. That it's crunch time. It's facing adversity. It's only 2-1. But if you're Chris Knobloch and you're looking at how Dallas has handled this and looking at how deep they are, they're going to be a really hard team to come back from against down 3-1. It's
sure.
It's just, that's the reality of it. I think Edmonton, in a lot of ways, is playing their hand down 2-1 before it gets even more desperate.
I don't disagree with that. I think for the Edmonton Oilers, you have to do whatever you can to not go down 3-1. 3-1 might as well be 3-0 in terms of a series lead with this Dallas Stars team. So if you want to talk about the intangibles that Corey Perry brings to the lineup, that's fine with me too. But I don't disagree with you. I think you're right on the money. Like, this should be a very desperate Edmonton Oilers team, understanding the gravity of what this game could mean, either going back to Dallas 2-2 or going back to Dallas with the Stars having the opportunity to finish off the series.
I'm not going to question Chris Knobloch and his lineup decisions either. After what he did with his goaltending in the second round, in taking Stuart Skinner out, giving him a chance to reset, and allowing or having the faith in Callum Pickard to play that couple of games. And Edmonton doesn't beat Vancouver without that change.
Yeah.
But there's also
maybe
three people on the planet that would have made that change, knowing that it was Calvin Pickard as the backup, making $800,000. By the way, Edmonton's goaltending in the Stanley Cup playoffs is a cap hit of under $4 million. Less than Jack Campbell. So
that's wild.
There was nothing that told you that Calvin Pickard was going to be able to do it other than no other option to go down that pathway. So Chris Knobloch made that decision, and I'm serious. There's on less than five people in the world would have made that decision.
So I know I wouldn't have done it.
So putting Corey Perry in back in?
Yeah.
I'm fine with it. Who'd you say would have done it?
I said I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have moved away.
Nope.
From Stuart Skinner.
Great story. Great story with Calvin.
For sure.
Awesome stuff. No way. I just do it. I don't think Pete DeBoer would have done it because he never changed from Martin Jones.
Yeah.
Pete's a pretty good coach. Utah. You guys see the news? Ryan Smith was on the Pat McAfee show today. Mm-hmm. Said they're down to four names. Apparently they're still going to go with the Utah Hockey Club next year, even though they're down to four names.
It's weird.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll change that.
Like I hope they do. I mean, especially if they kind of narrow it down and, you know, we're talking about a legit team nickname by the draft. Like, I see no reason why they have to go with Utah Hockey Club next season. That'd be a bit boring.
Winnipeg did it at the draft. They announced the Jets. Now, they were probably working behind the scenes. Well, they would have been.
Sure.
But I remember the draft in St. Paul. It was Kevin Cheveldayoff announcing Mark Scheifele drafted by the Winnipeg Jets. That's the same timeline that we're in. Now, Ryan Smith, the owner, says that it's coming, the team name. It'll be out soon. But it says it's down to four. And the choices include Mammoth and Yeti, along with two other names. Mammoth and Yeti. I thought of you because that fits into what you were hoping for. You were hoping for Yeti, right?
Yes. I am over the moon excited that Yeti is still in contention, that it's survived the cuts, that it's among one of the four options on the table still for the Utah team. I love the idea of the Yeti, mainly because of the Yeti foot that the Colorado Avalanche used on their jerseys as a secondary logo forever. Like, just the idea that Utah could come in to the league and immediately step on the toes of Colorado would be hilarious to me. Love it.
Okay, you think of Yeti as like Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
I think of Yeti as a drink cup, a water bottle. That's where
seriously?
That's where my mind goes with Yeti. I hear Yeti, I go water bottle. I know it means the Bigfoot. But in today's terminology and society, I think water bottle. Where's my Yeti?
Well, they're definitely not putting a water bottle on their jersey.
No. But here's the thing. The National Hockey League signed a deal yesterday. Like one of those sponsorship deals with Yeti.
Okay. Really?
How about that for timing?
That's great.
We're talking
timing.
About the water bottle, not the...
Okay.
It would have been great if they
Needs to happen... Whatever needs to happen for it to be the Yeti, I don't really care. Like, it's great timing, and that'd be awesome. I don't associate Yeti with the water bottle, and that's mainly because I drink out of a Stanley Cup.
What about Mammoth? You okay with that? Because it does feel like it's down to those two. I know there's two other names, but these two, Mammoth and Yeti, were kind of more popular.
I'm okay with Mammoth. Like, I don't dislike it. I don't have really strong opinions one way or another. Like, I wouldn't be disappointed, but it's not my first choice.
Here's the thing with Yeti. Like, if you're going Bigfoot, it's a big, slow. Bigfoot's not known for its speed. I've never seen one.
Can be fast. No, he can be. He's out of focus all the time. He's not slow. He's fast.
I think of a Bigfoot as big, slow. Now, I would go back to the Bionic Man. Like, he always had a tough time with Bigfoot, with Sasquatch. Steve Austin always
but
had
my,
a hard time
my,
with,
my
with
point,
Bionic Man.
But
doesn't
my point
doesn't it create,
is,
like Big Slow. Like, do you want to be named after a
no.
Big Slow?
No. I think you're getting Bigfoot all wrong.
Yeah. Like, by the way, I hate to break it to you guys.
He's fast.
But Bigfoot is not Yeti. Yeti is the abominable snowman.
Okay. Sounds similar.
I mean, no, it's a cousin of Bigfoot. Yeah.
Well, no, they live in the snow. They're white.
Sounds like it.
Well, it's like a polar bear
yeah.
and like a
yeah.
black bear. It's similar but different.
Well, I think of the abominable snowman from the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer cartoon at Christmas time with Yukon Cornelius. That's what they should put on their jerseys.
Or whatever Luke Skywalker has to fight off.
Oh, yes, an empire. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing was fierce.
Like, that's what I'm saying. That's why you go Yeti. Come on.
What about the mammoth? Could you do a similar logo? Yeah. Is the mammoth?
I mean,
what's a mammoth?
I suppose.
I think the problem with that
like a
is
saber-tooth tiger.
My initial thought is mammoth.
Is a mammoth
mountain?
A cat? Is that what it is?
Hold on. It's an animal of some kind.
Like woolly mammoth from the Flintstones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if I like that as much as Yeti.
I like that one more than Yeti.
Well, you just got to be difficult.
Yeah, it's like a giant elephant.
Yeah, I like that one.
It's hairy though.
Well,
yeah. I mean, you've already got the saber-toothed tiger on the natural predators. Do I really need to go back to the prehistoric times before the ice ages and all that?
I like the fact that there's not an S on either one of these.
That's okay. I like that too.
Hold on. Here's the problem. Like, if you have an issue with the Yeti being too slow,
yeah,
I don't know that the mammoth is going to work out for you. Like, elephants aren't fast. And that's the closest approximation of what a mammoth is an elephant.
Yeah. I just think, like, one's 2 feet human-like, one's a large beast. I'll take the large beast. Glad we had this talk.
A Yeti's a large beast.
Back with Catching Up with Chapman next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Oh, Christopher.
Hi, Darren. So, just want to read some of the texts that we've got. And a couple people, actually, Stephanie and Mike, mentioned Myles Garrett, who ripped off Mason Rudolph's helmet
and beat him
with it.
Yeah.
Apparently, the player's stick that was given away by Marc-Andre Fleury was Barkley Goodrow, and he got into a fight with William Karlsson. A couple people have mentioned Mike Tyson and biting off of Evander Holyfield's ear.
That's a great one.
Ooh.
And one of my favorite ones, and I remember it, was the player for the Kansas City Chiefs, because it happened against the New York Jets. An official threw a flag for pass interference, and he picked up the flag and threw it into the stands after the official flagged him for pass interference. So some good ones. Also,
we'd all want to do that.
Yeah, Joey Zamboni, paying attention, and he's down with Star Wars, apparently, because he mentioned that the thing that Luke has to kill in Empire is called a Wampa. So he says Utah Wampas. And then Dean says, why not Mammoth with a Yeti mascot? And some pretty good stuff. Some people
you
saying...
Can get you can get the Yeti to ride the Mammoth. It's great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, some other people saying that Kachuk probably deserved it as well. So Christopher Boyd mentions Johan Franzen ripping out Patrick Kane's mouthpiece in the 2009 Western Conference Final. Good memory there.
I forgot about that.
He didn't. Christopher didn't forget it.
Did anybody say whether they talk to people they don't like?
Yeah, someone did, actually. Michael Russell said he's more of a Chapman, I'm nice to everyone, or try to be. I don't like people being left out, and I don't think there is ever anyone I really hate.
That's lying.
Oh, he's Michael's telling
the
truth.
Said a lot of things.
That's kind of how I am.
You're lying.
But he doesn't like the way Kachuk chews on his mouth guard, so maybe Matthew Kachuk is on the list of people
I'm the only one
like.
That tells the truth around here.
That's not true.
Talk to you guys tomorrow. Enjoy the game.